Bell dried his hands and came back to the table and sat. He looked at his uncle.
Did you ever do anything you was ashamed of to the point where you never would tell anybody?
His uncle thought about that.
I'd say I have, he said. I'd say about anybody has. What is it you found out about me?
I'm serious.
All right.
I mean something bad.
How bad?
I don't know. Where it stuck with you.
Like something you could go to jail for?
Well, it could be something like that, I reckon. It wouldn't have to be.
I'd have to think about that.
No, you wouldn't.
What's got into you? I ain't gonna invite you out here no more.
You didn't invite me this time.
Well, that's true.
Bell sat with his elbows on the table and his hands folded together. His uncle watched him.
I hope you ain't fixing to make some terrible confession, he said. I might not want to hear it.
Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right.
It ain't of a sexual nature, is it?
No.
That's all right. Go ahead anyways.
It's about being a war hero.
All right. Would that be you?
Yeah, that'd be me.
Go ahead.
I'm trying to.
This is actually what happened. What got me that commendation. Go ahead.
We was in a forward position monitoring radio signals, and we was holed up in a farmhouse, just a two-room stone house. We'd been there 2 days, and it never did quit raining, rained like all get out. Somewhere about the middle of the second day, the radio operator had took his headset off, and he said, "Listen." Well, we did. When somebody said, "Listen," you listened. And we didn't hear nothing. And I said, "What is it?" And he said, "Nothing." I said, "What the hell are you talking about, nothing? What did you hear?" And he said, "I mean, you can't hear nothing. Listen." And he was right. There was not a sound nowheres. No field piece or nothing. All you could hear was the rain. And that was about the last thing I remember. When I woke up, I was laying outside in the rain, and I don't know how long I'd been laying there. I was wet and cold, and my ears was ringing. And whenever I sat up and looked, the house was gone. Just part of the wall at one end was standing was all. A mortar shell had come through the wall and just blowed it all to hell. Well, I couldn't hear a thing. I couldn't hear the rain or nothing. If I said something, I could hear it inside my head, but that was all. Well, I got up and walked over to where the house was, and there were sections of the roof laying over a good part of it, and I seen one of our men buried in them rocks and timbers, and I tried to move some stuff to see if I couldn't get to him. Well, my whole head just felt numb. And while I was doing that, I raised up and looked out, and here come these German riflemen across this field. They was coming out of a patch of woods about 200 yards off and coming across this field. I still didn't know exactly what had happened. I was kindly in a daze. I crouched down there by the side of the wall. The first thing I seen was Wallace's .30 caliber sticking out from under some timbers. That thing was air-cooled, and it was belt-fed out of a metal box, and I figured if I let them run up a little more on me, I could operate on them out there in the open, and they wouldn't call in another round because they'd be too close. I scratched around, finally got the thing dug out, it and the tripod. And I dug around some more and come up with the ammo box for it, and I got set up behind the section of wall there and jacked back the slide and pushed off the safety, and here we went. It was hard to tell where the rounds was hitting on account of the ground being wet, but I knew I was doing some good. I emptied out about 2 feet of belt, and I kept watching out there, and after it'd been quiet 2 or 3 minutes, one of them crowds jumped up and tried to make a run for the woods, but I was ready for that. I kept the rest of them pinned down, and all the while I could hear some of our men groaning, and I sure didn't know what I was going to do come dark. And that's what they give me the Bronze Star for. The major that put me in for it was named McAllister, and he was from Georgia. and I told him I didn't want it. And he just sat there looking at me, and directly he said, I'm waiting on you to tell me your reasons for wanting to refuse a military commendation. So I told him. And when I got done, he said, Sergeant, you will accept the commendation. I guess they had to make it look good, look like it counted for something, losing that position. He said, you will accept it, and if you tell it around what you told me, it will get back to me, and when it does, you are going to wish you was in hell with your back broke. Is that clear? And I said, yes, sir. Said that was about as clear as you could make it. So that was it.
So now you're fixing to tell me what you done.
Yes, sir.
When it got dark.
When it got dark, yes, sir.
What did you do?
I cut and run. The old man thought about that. After a while, he said,
I got to assume that it seemed like a pretty good idea at the time.
Yeah, Bell said. It did.
What would have happened if you'd stayed there?
They'd have come up in the dark and lobbed grenades in on me. Or maybe gone back up in the woods and called in another round.
Yeah.
Bell sat there with his hands crossed on the oilcloth. He looked at his uncle. The old man said,
I ain't sure what it is you're asking me.
I ain't either.
You left your buddies behind.
Yeah.
You didn't have no choice.
I had a choice. I could have stayed.
You couldn't have helped them.
Probably not. I thought about taking that 30 caliber off about 100 feet or so and waiting till they throwed their grenades or whatever. Letting them come on up. I could have killed a few more, even in the dark. I don't know. I sat there and watched it come night. Pretty sunset. It had done cleared up by then. It finally quit raining. That field had been sowed in oats, and there was just the stalks, fall of the year. I watched it get dark, and I had not heard nothing from anybody that was in the wreckage there for a while. They might could have all been dead by then, but I didn't know that. And quick as it got dark, I got up and I left out of there. I didn't even have a gun. I dang sure wasn't hauling that 30 caliber with me. Well, my head had quit hurting some, and I could even hear a little. It had quit raining, but I was wet through, and I was cold to where my teeth was chattering. I could make out the dipper, and I headed due west as near as I could make it, and I just kept going. I passed a house or two, but there wasn't nobody around. It was a battle zone, that country. People had just left out. Come daylight, I laid up in a patch of woods. What woods it was. That whole country looked like a burn. Just the tree trunks was all that was left. And sometime the next night I come to an American position, and that was pretty much it. I thought after so many years it would go away. I don't know why I thought that. Then I thought that maybe I could make up for it, and I reckon that's what I have tried to do.
They sat. After a while, the old man said,
Well, in all honesty, I can't see it being all that bad. Maybe you ought to ease up on yourself some.
Maybe. But you go into battle, it's a blood oath to look after the men with you. And I don't know why I didn't. I wanted to. When you're called on like that, you have to make up your mind that you'll live with the consequences, but you don't know what the consequences will be. You end up laying a lot of things at your own door that you didn't plan on. If I was supposed to die over there doing what I'd give my word to do, then that's what I should have done. You can tell it any way you want, but that's the way it is. I should have done it, and I didn't. And some part of me has never quit wishing I could go back, and I can't. I didn't know you could steal your own life. and I didn't know that it would bring you no more benefit than about anything else you might steal. I think I done the best with it I knew how, but it still wasn't mine. It never has been.
The old man sat for a long time. He was bent slightly forward, looking at the floor. After a while, he nodded.
I think I know where this is going, he said.
Yes, sir.
What do you think he would have done?
I know what he would have done.
Yeah. I guess I do, too.
He'd have sat there till hell froze over and then stayed a while on the ice.
Do you think that makes him a better man than you?
Yes, sir, I do.
I might could tell you some things about him that would change your mind. I knew him pretty good.
Well, sir, I doubt that you could, with all due respect. Besides which, I doubt that you would.
I ain't. But then I might say that he'd lived in different times. Had Jack have been born 50 years later, he might have had a different view of things.
You might, but nobody in this room would believe it.
Yeah, I expect that's true.
He looked up at Bell.
What did you tell me for?
I think I just needed to unload my wagon.
You waited long enough about doing it.
Yes, sir. Maybe I needed to hear it myself. I'm not the man of an older time they say I am. I wish I was. I'm a man of this time.
Or maybe this was just a practice run.
Maybe.
You aim to tell her?
Yes, sir, I guess I do.
Well,
what do you think she'll say?
Well, I expect you might come out of it a little better than what you think.
Yes, sir,
Bell said.
I surely hope so.
Part 10.
He said I was being hard on myself. Said it was a sign of old age, trying to set things right. I guess there's some truth to that, but it ain't the whole truth. I agreed with him that there wasn't a whole lot good you could say about old age, and he said he knew one thing, and I said, what is that? And he said, it don't last long. I waited for him to smile, but he didn't. I said, well, that's pretty cold. And he said it was no colder than what the facts called for. So that was all there was about that. I knew what he'd say anyways, bless his heart. You care about people, you try and lighten their load for 'em, even when it's self-ordained. The other thing that was on my mind I never even got around to, but I believe it to be related, because I believe that whatever you do in your life, it'll get back to you. If you live long enough, it will. And I can think of no reason in the world for that no good to have killed that girl. What did she ever do to him? The truth is, I never should have gone up there in the first place. Now they got that Mexican up here in Huntsville for killing that state trooper, that he shot him and set his car afire and him in it, and I don't believe he'd done it. But that's what he's gonna get the death penalty for. So what is my obligation there? I think I've sort of waited for all of this to go away somehow or another, and of course it ain't. I think I knew that when it started. It had that feel to it. Like I was fixing to get drug into something where the road back was gonna be a pretty long one. When he asked me why this come up now after so many years, I said that it had always been there, that I had just ignored it for the most part, but he's right, it did come up. I think sometimes people would rather have a bad answer about things than no answer at all. When I told it, well, it took a shape I would not have guessed it to have, and in that way he was right too. It was like a ball player told me one time. He said, that if he had some slight injury and it bothered him a little bit, nagged at him, he generally played better. It kept his mind focused on one thing instead of 100. I can understand that. Not that it changes anything. I thought, if I lived my life in the strictest way I knew how, then I would not ever again have a thing that would eat on me that away. I said that I was 21 years old and I was entitled to one mistake, particularly if I could learn from it and become the sort of man I had it in my mind to be. Well, I was wrong about all of that. Now I aim to quit, and a good part of it is just knowing that I won't be called on to hunt this man. I reckon he's a man. So you could say to me that I ain't changed a bit, and I don't know that I would even have an argument about that. 36 years. That's a painful thing to know. One other thing, he said. You'd think a man that had waited 80-some-odd years on God to come into his life, well, you'd think he'd come. If he didn't, you'd still have to figure that he knew what he was doing. I don't know what other description of God you could have. So what you end up with is that those he has spoke to are the ones that must have needed it the worst. And that's not an easy thing to accept, particularly as it might apply to someone like Loretta. But then, maybe we are all of us looking through the wrong end of the glass. Always have been. Aunt Carolyn's letters to Harold. The reason she had them letters was that he had saved them. She was the one raised him, and she was the same as his mother. Them letters was dog-eared and tore and covered with mud and I don't know what all. The thing about them letters, well, for one thing, you could tell they were just country people. I don't think he'd ever been out of Erie County, let alone the state of Texas. But the thing about them letters was you could tell that the world she was planning on him coming back to was not ever going to be here. Easy to see now, 60-some years on. But they just had no notion at all. You can say you like it or you don't like it, but it don't change nothing. I've told my deputies more than once that you fix what you can fix and you let the rest go. If there ain't nothing to be done about it, it ain't even a problem. It's just an aggravation. And the truth is, I don't have no more idea of the world that is brewing out there than what Harold did. Of course, as it turned out, he never come home at all. There was not nothing in them letters to suggest that she had reckoned on that possibility. Well, you know she did. She just wouldn't have said nothing about it to him. I've still got that medal, of course. It come in a fancy purple box with a ribbon and all. It was in my bureau for years, and then one day I took it out and put it in the drawer in the living room table where I wouldn't have to look at it. Not that I ever looked at it, but it was there. Harold didn't get no medal. He just come home in a wooden box. And I don't believe they had Gold Star mothers in the First World War, but if they had of, Aunt Carolyn would not have got one of them either, since he was not her natural son. But she should have. She never got his war pension, neither. So, I went back out there one more time. I walked over that ground, and there was very little sign that anything had ever took place there. I picked up a shell casing or two, that was about it. I stood out there a long time, and I thought about things. It was one of them warm days you get in the winter sometimes, a little wind. I still keep thinking, maybe it is something about the country, sort of the way Ellis said. I thought about my family and about him out there in his wheelchair in the old house, and it just seemed to me that this country has got a strange kind of history, and a damned bloody one, too, about anywhere you care to look. I could stand back off and smile about such thoughts as them, but I still have them. I don't make excuses for the way I think, not no more. I talked to my daughter. She would be 30 now. That's all right. I don't care how that sounds. I like talking to her. Call it superstition or whatever you want. I know that over the years, I have given her the heart I always wanted for myself, and that's all right. That's why I listen to her. I know I'll always get the best from her. It don't get mixed up with my own ignorance or my own meanness. I know how that sounds, and I guess I'd have to say that I don't care. I never even told my wife, and we don't have a whole lot of secrets from one another. I don't think she'd say I'm crazy, but some might. Ed Tom, yeah, they had to swear out a lunacy warrant. I hear they're feeding them under the door. That's all right. I listen to what she says, and what she says makes good sense. I wish she'd say more of it. I can use all the help I can get. Well, that's enough of that.
When he walked in the house, the phone was ringing.
"Sheriff Bell," he said.
He made his way to the sideboard and picked up the phone.
"Sheriff Bell," he said.
"Sheriff, this is Detective Cook with the Odessa Police."
"Yes, sir."
"There's a report we have here that is flagged with your name. It has to do with a woman named Carla Jean Moss that was murdered here back in March."
"Yes, sir. I appreciate you calling."
"They picked up the murder weapon off of the FBI ballistics database, and they traced it down to a boy here in Midland. Now, the boy says he got the gun out of a truck at an accident scene. Just seen it and took it. And I expect that's right. I talked to him. He sold it, and it turned up in a convenience store robbery in Shreveport, Louisiana. Now, the accident where he got the gun, it took place on the same day as the murder did. The man that owned the gun left it in the truck and disappeared, and he ain't been heard from since. So you can see where this is going. We don't get a lot of unsolved homicides up here, and we damn sure don't like 'em. Can I ask you what was your interest in the case, Sheriff?"
Bell told him. Cook listened. Then he gave him a number. It was the investigator of the accident, Roger Catron.
"Let me call him first. He'll talk to you."
"That's all right," Bell said. "He'll talk to me. I've known him for years."
He called the number and Catron answered.
"How you doing, Ed Tom?"
"I ain't bragging. What can I do you for?"
Bell told him about the wreck.
"Yes, sir," Catron said. "Sure, I remember it. There's two boys killed in that wreck. We still ain't found the driver of the other vehicle."
"What happened?"
"Boys been smoking dope. They run a stop sign and hit a brand new Dodge pickup broadside. Totaled it out. The old boy in the pickup, he climbed out and just took off up the street before we got there. Truck had been bought in Mexico. Illegal. No EPA or nothing. No registration."
"What about the other vehicle?"
"There was three boys in it, 19, 20 years old, all of them Mexican. The only one lived was the one in the back seat. Apparently they was passing around a doober, and they went through this intersection, probably about 60 mph, and just T-boned the old boy in the truck. The one in the passenger side of the car, he come through the windscreen head first and crossed the street and landed on a woman's porch. She was out putting some mail in her box, and he didn't miss her by much. Well, she set off down the street in her house wrapper and hair curlers just a-hollering. I don't think she's right yet."
"What'd y'all do with the boy that took the gun?"
"We cut him loose."
"If I come up there, you reckon I could talk to him?"
"I'd say you could. I'm looking at him on the screen right now."
"What's his name?"
"David DeMarco."
"Is he Mexican?"
"No. The boys in the car was, not him."
"Will he talk to me?"
"One way to find out."
"I'll be there in the morning.
I'll look forward to seeing you."
Catron had called the boy and talked to him, and when the boy walked into the cafe, he didn't seem particularly worried about anything. He slid into the booth and propped up one foot and sucked at his teeth and looked at Bell.
"You want some coffee?"
"Yeah. I'll take some coffee."
Bell raised a finger and the waitress came over and took his order.
He looked at the boy.
What I wanted to talk to you about was the man that walked away from that wreck. I wonder if there's anything that comes to mind about him, anything you might remember.
The boy shook his head.
No,
he said. He looked around the room.
How bad was he hurt?
I don't know. Looked like his arm was broke.
What else?
Had a cut in his head. I couldn't say how bad he was hurt. He could walk.
Bell watched him.
How old a man would you say he was?
Hell, Sheriff, I don't know. He's pretty bloody and all.
On the report you said he was maybe in his late 30s.
Yeah, something like that.
Who were you with?
What?
Who were you with?
Wasn't with nobody.
The neighbor there who called in the report, he said there was two of you.
Well, he's full of it.
Yeah. I talked to him this morning, and he seemed to me to be about as unfull of it as they come.
The waitress brought the coffee. DeMarco poured about a quarter cup of sugar into his and sat stirring it.
You know, this man had just got done killing a woman two blocks away when he got in that wreck.
Yeah, I didn't know it at the time.
You know how many people he's killed?
I don't know nothing about him.
How tall was he, would you say?
Not real tall, sort of medium.
Was he wearing boots?
Yeah, I think he was wearing boots.
What kind of boots?
I think they might have been ostrich.
Expensive boots?
Yeah.
How badly was he bleeding?
I don't know. He's bleeding. He had a cut on his head.
What did he say?
He didn't say nothing.
What did you say to him?
Nothing. I asked him, was he all right?
You think he might have died?
I got no idea.
Bell leaned back. He turned the salt cellar a half turn on the tabletop. Then he turned it back again.
Tell me who you were with.
Wasn't with nobody.
Bell studied him. The boy sucked his teeth. He picked up the coffee mug and sipped the coffee and set it down again.
You ain't going to help me, are you?
I done told you all I know to tell. You seen the report. That's all I know to tell you.
Bell sat watching him. Then he got up and put on his hat and left. In the morning, he went to the high school and got some names from DeMarco's teacher. The first one he talked to wanted to know how he'd found him. He was a big kid, and he sat with his hands folded and looked down at his tennis shoes. They were about a size 14 and had left and right written on the toe caps in purple ink.
There's something you all ain't telling me.
The boy shook his head.
Did he threaten you?
No.
What did he look like? Was he Mexican?
I don't think so. He was kindly dark-complected, is all.
Were you afraid of him?
I was until you showed up. Hell, Sheriff, I knew we shouldn't have took the damn thing. It's a dumbass thing to do. I ain't going to sit here and say it was David's idea, even if it was. I'm big enough to say no.
Yes, you are.
It was all just weird. Them boys in the car was dead. Am I in trouble over this?
What else did he say to you?
The boy looked around the lunchroom. He looked almost in tears.
If I had it to do over again, I'd do it different. I know that.
What did he say?
He said that we didn't know what he looked like. You give David $100 bill.
$100?
Yeah. David give him his shirt to make a sling for his arm.
Bell nodded.
All right. What did he look like?
He was medium height, medium build. Looked like he was in shape. In his mid-30s, maybe. Dark hair, dark brown, I think. I don't know, Sheriff. He looked like anybody.
Like anybody.
The kid looked at his shoes. He looked up at Bell.
He didn't look like anybody. I mean, there wasn't nothing unusual looking about him, but he didn't look like anybody you'd want to mess with. When he said something, you damn sure listened. There was a bone sticking out under the skin on his arm, and he didn't pay no more attention to it than nothing.
All right.
Am I in trouble over this?
No.
I appreciate it.
You don't know where things will take you, do you?
No, sir, you don't. I think I learned something from it, if that's any use to you.
It is. Do you think DeMarco learned anything?
The boy shook his head.
I don't know, he said. I can't speak for David.
Part 11.
I got Molly to run down his relatives, and we finally found his dad in San Saba. I left to go up there on a Friday evening, and I remember thinking to myself when I left that this was probably another dumb thing I was fixing to do, but I went anyways. I done talked to him on the phone. He didn't sound like he was waiting to see me, or he wasn't waiting, but he said to come on, so here I went. Checked in a motel when I got there and drove out to his house in the morning. His wife had died some years back. We sat out on the porch and drank iced tea, and I guess we'd have sat there from now on if I hadn't have said something. He was a bit older than me, 10 years maybe. I told him what I'd come to tell him. About his boy. Told him the facts. He just sat there and nodded. He was sitting in a swing, and he just rocked back and forth a little and held that glass of tea in his lap. I didn't know what else to say, so I just shut up, and we sat there for quite some time. And then he said, and he didn't look at me. He just looked out across the yard, and he said, he was the best rifle shot I ever saw, bar none. I didn't know what to say. I said, yes, sir. He was a sniper in Vietnam, you know. I said I didn't know that. He was not in no drug deals. No, sir, he was not. He nodded. He wasn't raised that way, he said. Yes, sir. Was you in the war? Yes, I was, European theater. He nodded. Llewellyn, when he come home, he went to visit several families of buddies of his that had not made it back. He give it up. He didn't know what to say to him. He said he could see him sitting there looking at him and wishing he was dead. You could see it in their faces, in the place of their own loved one, you understand? Yes, sir, I can understand that. I can, too. But aside from that, they'd all done things over there that they just as soon left over there. We didn't have nothing like that in the war, or very little of it. He smacked the tar out of one or two of them hippies, spitting on them, calling them a baby killer. A lot of them boys that come back, they're still having problems. I thought it was because they didn't have the country behind them, but I think it might be worse than that, even. The country they did have was in pieces. It still is. It wasn't the hippies' fault. It wasn't the fault of them boys that got sent over there, neither. 18, 19-year-old. He turned and looked at me. And then I thought he looked a lot older. His eyes looked old. He said, people will tell you it was Vietnam brought this country to its knees. But I never believed that. It was already in bad shape. Vietnam was just the icing on the cake. We didn't have nothing to give 'em to take over there. If we'd sent 'em without rifles, I don't know as they'd have been all that much worse off. You can't go to war like that. You can't go to war without God. I don't know what is going to happen when the next one comes. I surely don't. And that was pretty much all that was said. I thanked him for his time. The next day was going to be my last day in the office, and I had a good deal to think about. I drove back to I-10, along the back roads.
drove down to Cherokee and took 501. I tried to put things in perspective, but sometimes you're just too close to it. It's a life's work to see yourself for what you really are, and even then you might be wrong. And that is something I don't want to be wrong about. I've thought about why it was I wanted to be a lawman. There was always some part of me that wanted to be in charge, pretty much insisted on it. Wanted people to listen to what I had to say. But there was a part of me, too, that just wanted to pull everybody back in the boat. If I've tried to cultivate anything, it's been that. I think we are all of us ill-prepared for what is to come, and I don't care what shape it takes. And whatever comes, my guess is that it will have small power to sustain us. These old people I talk to, if you could have told them that there would be people on the streets of our Texas towns with green hair and bones in their noses speaking a language they couldn't even understand, well, they just flat out wouldn't have believed you. But what if you'd have told them it was their own grandchildren? Well, all of that is signs and wonders, but it don't tell you how it got that way. And it don't tell you nothing about how it's fixin' to get, neither. Part of it was, I always thought I could at least some way put things right. And I guess I just don't feel that way no more. I don't know what I do feel like. I feel like them old people I was talking about, which ain't gonna get better, neither. I'm being asked to stand for something that I don't have the same belief in it I once did. Asked to believe in something I might not hold with the way I once did. That's the problem. I failed at it even when I did. Now I've seen it held to the light, seen any number of believers fall away. I've been forced to look at it again, and I've been forced to look at myself. For better or for worse, I do not know. I don't know that I would even advise you to throw in with me, and I never had them sorts of doubts before. If I'm wiser in the ways of the world, it come at a price. Pretty good price, too. When I told her I was quitting, she at first didn't take me to mean it literally, but I told her I did so mean it. I told her I hoped the people of this county would have better sense than to even vote for me. I told her I didn't feel right taking their money. She said, well, you don't mean that, and I told her I meant it, every word. We're $6,000 in debt over this job, too, and I don't know what I'm going to do about that either. Well, we just sat there for a time. I didn't think it would upset her like it done. Finally, I just said, Loretta, I can't do it no more. And she smiled, and she said, you aim to quit while you're ahead? And I said, no, ma'am. I just aim to quit. I ain't ahead by a damn sight. I never will be. One other thing, and then I'll shut up. I would just assume that it hadn't have got told, but they put it in the papers. I went up to Ozona and talked to the district attorney up there, and they said I could talk to that Mexican's lawyer if I wanted, and maybe testify at the trial, but that was all they could do, meaning that they wouldn't do nothing. So I wound up doing that, and of course it didn't come to nothing, and the old boy got the death penalty. So I went up to Huntsville to see him, and here's what happened. I walked in there and sat down, and he, of course, knew who I was, as he'd seen me at the trial and all, and he said, what did you bring me? And I said, I didn't bring him nothing. And he said, well, he thought I must have brung him something, some candy or something. Said he figured I was sweet on him. I looked at the guard, and the guard looked away. I looked at this man. Mexican, maybe 35-40 year old, spoke good English. I said to him that I didn't come up there to be insulted, but I just wanted him to know that I'd done the best I could for him, and that I was sorry because I didn't think he'd done it. And he just reared back and laughed, and he said, "Where do they find somebody like you? Have they got you in diapers yet?" I shot that son of a bitch right between the eyes and drug him back to his car by the hair of the head and set the car on fire and burned him to grease. Well, these people can read you pretty good. If I had have smacked him in the mouth, that guard would not have said word one, and he knew that. He knew that. I seen that county prosecutor coming out of there, and I knowed him just a little to talk to, and we stopped and visited some. I didn't tell him what had happened, but he knew about me trying to help that man, and he might could have put two and two together, I don't know. He didn't ask me nothing about him. Didn't ask me what I was doing up there or nothing. There's two kinds of people that don't ask a lot of questions. One is too dumb to, and the other don't need to. I'll leave it to you to guess which one I figure him to be. He's just standing there in the hall with his briefcase, like he had all the time in the world. He told me that when he got out of law school, he'd been a defense attorney for a while. He said it made his life too complicated. He didn't want to spend the rest of his life being lied to on a daily basis just as a matter of course. I told him that a lawyer one time told me that in law school they try and teach you not to worry about right and wrong, but just follow the law, and I said I wasn't so sure about that. Well, he thought about that, and he nodded, and he said that he pretty much had to agree with that lawyer. He said that if you don't follow the law, right and wrong won't save you. Which I guess I can see the sense of, but it don't change the way I think. Finally, I asked him if he knew who Mammon was, and he said, "Mammon? Yes, Mammon. You mean like in God and Mammon? Yes, sir." "Well," he said, "I can't say as I do. I know it's in the Bible. Is it the devil?" "I don't know. I'm going to look it up. I got a feeling I ought to know who it is." He kindly smiled and he said, "You sound like he might be getting ready to take up the spare bedroom." "Well," I said, "that would be one concern. In any case, I feel I need to familiarize myself with his habits." He nodded, kind of smiled. Then he did ask me a question. He said, "This mystery man you think killed that trooper and burned him up in his car? What do you know about him?" "I don't know nothing. I wish I did. Or I think I wish it. Yeah. He's pretty much a ghost. Is he pretty much or is he one?" "No. He's out there. I wish he wasn't, but he is." He nodded. "I guess if he was a ghost, you wouldn't have to worry about him." I said that was right. But I've thought about it since, and I think the answer to his question is that when you encounter certain things in the world, the evidence for certain things, you realize that you have come upon something that you may very well not be equal to, and I think that this is one of them things. When you've said that it's real, and not just in your head, I'm not all that sure what it is you have said. Loretta did say one thing. She said something to the effect that it wasn't my fault, and I said it was. And I had thought about that, too. I told her that if you got a bad enough dog in your yard, people will stay out of it. And they didn't. When he got home, she wasn't there, but her car was. He walked out to the barn, and her horse was gone.
He started to go back to the house, but then he stopped and he thought about her maybe being hurt. And he went to the tack room and got his saddle down and carried it out into the bay and whistled at his horse and watched his head come up over the stall door at the end of the barn with his ears scissoring. He rode out with the reins in one hand, patting the horse. He talked to the horse as he went.
"Feels good to be out, don't it? You know where they went? That's all right. Don't you worry about it. We'll find them."
40 minutes later, he saw her and stopped and sat the horse and watched. She was riding along a red dirt ridge to the south, sitting with her hands crossed on the pommel. Looking toward the last of the sun, the horse slogging slowly through the loose sandy dirt, the red stain of it following them in the still air.
"That's my heart yonder," he told the horse. "It always was."
They rode together out to Warner's Well and dismounted and sat under the cottonwoods while the horses grazed. Doves coming into the tanks.
"Late in the year, we won't be seeing them much longer."
She smiled.
"Late in the year," she said.
"You hate it."
"Leaving here?"
"Leaving here."
"I'm all right."
"Because of me, though, ain't it?"
She smiled.
"Well," she said, "past a certain age, I don't guess there's any such thing as good change."
"I guess we're in trouble, then."
"We'll be all right.
I think I'm going to like having you home for dinner."
"I like being home any time."
"I remember when Daddy retired, Mama told him. I said for better or for worse, but I didn't say nothing about lunch."
Belle smiled.
"I'll bet she wishes he could come home now."
"I'll bet she does, too. I'll bet I do, for that matter."
"I shouldn't ought to have said that."
"You didn't say nothing wrong."
"You'd say that anyways.
That's my job."
Belle smiled.
"You wouldn't tell me if I was in the wrong?"
"Nope."
"What if I wanted you to?"
"Tough."
He watched the little brindle desert doves come stooping in under the dull rose light.
"Is that true?" he said.
"Pretty much. Not altogether."
"Is that a good idea?"
"Well," she said, "whatever it was, I expect you'd get it figured out with no help from me. And if it was something we just disagreed about, I reckon I'd get over it."
"Where I might not."
She smiled and put her hand on his.
"Put it up," she said. "It's nice just to be here."
"Yes, ma'am. It is indeed."
Part 12.
I'll wake Loretta up just being awake myself. Be laying there and she'll say my name, like asking me if I'm there. Sometimes I'll go in the kitchen and get her a ginger ale and we'll sit there in the dark. I wish I had her ease about things. The world I've seen has not made me a spiritual person. Not like her. She worries about me, too. I see it. I reckon I thought that because I was older and the man, that she would learn from me, and in many respects she has. But I know where the debt lies. I think I know where we're headed. We're being bought with our own money, and it ain't just the drugs. There is fortunes being accumulated out there that they don't nobody even know about. What do we think is going to come of that money? Money that can buy whole countries. It done has. Can it buy this one? I don't think so. But it will put you in bed with people you ought not to be there with. It's not even a law enforcement problem. I doubt that it ever was. There's always been narcotics. But people don't just up and decide to dope themselves for no reason, by the millions. I don't have no answer about that. In particular, I don't have no answer to take heart from.
I told a reporter here a while back, young girl, seemed nice enough. She was just trying to be a reporter. She said, Sheriff, how come you let crime get so out of hand in your county? Sounded like a fair question, I reckon. Maybe it was a fair question. Anyway, I told her, I said, it starts when you begin to overlook bad manners. Anytime you quit hearing sir and ma'am, the end is pretty much in sight. I told her, I said, it reaches into Everstrata. You've heard about that, ain't you? Everstrata? You finally get into the sort of breakdown in mercantile ethics that leaves people setting around out in the desert dead in their vehicles, and by then, it's just too late. She gave me kindly a funny look. So the last thing I told her, and maybe I shouldn't have said it, I told her that you can't have a dope business without dopers. A lot of them are well-dressed and holding down good-paying jobs, too. I said, you might even know some yourself. The other thing is the old people, and I keep coming back to them. They look at me, it's always a question. Years back, I don't remember that. I don't remember it when I was sheriff back in the 50s. You see them, and they don't even look confused. They just look crazy. That bothers me. It's like they woke up and they don't know how they got where they're at. Well, in a manner of speaking, they don't. At supper this evening, she told me she'd been reading St. John, the Revelations. Anytime I get to talking about how things are, she'll find something in the Bible. So I asked her if Revelations had anything to say about the shape things was taken, and she said she'd let me know. I asked her if there was anything in there about green hair and nose bones, and she said not in so many words there wasn't. I don't know if that's a good sign or not. Then she come around behind my chair and put her arms around my neck and bit me on the ear. She's a very young woman in a lot of ways. If I didn't have her, I don't know what I would have. Well, yes, I do. You wouldn't need a box to put it in, neither. It was a cold, blustery day when he walked out of the courthouse for the last time. Some men could put their arms around a crying woman, but it never felt natural to him. He walked down the steps and out the back door and got in his truck and sat there. He couldn't name the feeling. It was sadness, but it was something else besides. And the something else besides was what had him sitting there instead of starting the truck. He'd felt like this before, but not in a long time. And when he said that, then he knew what it was. It was defeat. It was being beaten. More bitter to him than death. You need to get over that, he said. Then he started the truck. Part 13.
Where you went out the back door of that house, there was a stone water trough in the weeds by the side of the house. A galvanized pipe come off the roof, and the trough stayed pretty much full. And I remember stopping there one time and squatting down and looking at it, and I got to thinking about it. I don't know how long it had been there. 100 years, 200. You could see the chisel marks in the stone. It was hewed out of solid rock, and it was about 6 foot long and maybe 1.5 feet wide and about that deep. Just chiseled out of the rock. And I got to thinking about the man that done that. That country had not had a time of peace, much of any length at all, that I knew of. I've read a little of the history of it since, and I ain't sure it ever had one. But this man had set down with a hammer and chisel and carved out a stone water trough to last 10,000 years. Why was that? What was it that he had faith in? It wasn't that nothing would change, which is what you might think, I suppose. He had to know better than that.
I thought about it a good deal. I thought about it after I left there, with that house blown to pieces. I'm going to say that water trough is there yet. It would have took something to move it, I can tell you that. So I think about him sitting there with his hammer and his chisel, maybe just an hour or two after supper, I don't know. And I have to say that the only thing I can think is that there was some sort of promise in his heart. And I don't have no intentions of carving a stone water trough, but I would like to be able to make that kind of promise. I think that's what I would like most of all. The other thing is that I have not said much about my father, and I know I have not done him justice. I've been older now than he ever was for almost 20 years, so in a sense, I'm looking back at a younger man. He went on the road trading horses when he was not much more than a boy. He told me the first time or two he got skinned pretty good, but he learned. He said this trader one time, he put his arm around him, and he looked down at him, and he told him, said, "Son, I'm going to trade with you like you didn't even have a horse." Point being, some people will actually tell you what it is they aim to do to you, and whenever they do, you might want to listen. That stuck with me. He knew about horses, and he was good with them. I've seen him break a few, and he knew what he was doing. Very easy on the horse. Talked to him a lot. He never broke nothing in me, and I owe him more than I would have thought. As the world might look at it, I suppose I was a better man, bad as that sounds to say, bad as that is to say. That has got to have been hard to live with, let alone his daddy. He would never have made a lawman. He went to college, I think, 2 years, but he never did finish. I've thought about him a lot less than I should have, and I know that ain't right neither. I had 2 dreams about him after he died. I don't remember the first one all that well, but it was about meeting him in town somewheres, and he'd give me some money, and I think I lost it. But the second one, it was like we was both back in older times, and I was on horseback going through the mountains of a night, going through this pass in the mountains. It was cold, and there was snow on the ground, and he rode past me and kept on going, never said nothing. He just rode on past, and he had this blanket wrapped around him, and he had his head down, and when he rode past, I seen he was carrying fire in a horn, the way people used to do, and I could see the horn from the light inside of it, about the color of the moon. And in the dream, I knew that he was going on ahead, and that he was fixing to make a fire somewhere out there in all that dark and all that cold. And I knew that whenever I got there, he would be there. And then I woke up.